Are you a grill master? Are you looking to take your barbecue to the next level? Then you absolutely have to try Cox Sauce Barbecue Sauce. Y'all, I swear there was no relation here, but I wish there was, because this is some of the best barbecue sauce I've ever had. Originally created by the co-founder of Bojangles and kept in the Cox family for generations, Cox Sauce is a sweet and tangy Carolina Red barbecue sauce that goes great on chicken, ribs, pork, shrimp, and seafood. Just drizzle some on before everything's done, and you'll get that sweet, perfect tang with a touch of heat. Barbecue sauce also makes the best gift since it's kid-friendly and cheaper than whiskey. Head to their website and get a free bottle when you purchase three, or stock your pantry and get 25% off when you order four. That's coxsaucebbqsauce.com. All right, here we go. Welcome to episode 112 of Cox Talking Gamecocks, brought to you by Cox Sauce Barbecue Sauce. I am your host, Tim Cox, where I will keep every episode from 1801 to 2001. And, you know, I think it's about that time. We're all really in the holiday spirit, really into December now. It's just nice. That's the best time of year, man. I'm probably going to kick the show off a couple of times by saying that it's the most wonderful time of the year. And I hope all y'all out there are good little boys and girls and get gifts under your tree and in your stockings, whatever it may be. But I do want to say good luck to everyone who's listening that is at USC. I know it is finals week. I hope they've gone well for you. I hope they're going well for you. School is important. Study hard. And then just go right to Salty when you're done. That was always the move. When you're done with your last one, just go straight to Salty and have yourself a hell of a day. But as I said in the last episode, with finals going on this week, there are no athletics. They're on a bit of a pause. So really no score updates to bring y'all up to speed on. So this episode will be dedicated to a season retrospective, if you will, for the 2022 football regular season. Got a couple updates for y'all as well out of the football program. Big week. Mm-hmm. It was an eventful week, to say the least, in Gamecock country on the football side of things. So there are some players who have entered their name in the portal. You have linebacker Darryl Ware, defensive back Cam Hardy, defensive back Joey Hunter, defensive back Tyrese Ross. Then you have this wave where you have tight end Austin Stogner is going back to the portal after just 1 year at South Carolina after coming here via the portal. Stogner actually just landed at his old school in Oklahoma, so must have missed it. A little bit of a homecoming for him there. Great for him. And then the big one was Jaheim Bell. He entered the transfer portal, and, you know, this one hurts. I'll be honest with y'all, it hurts, but it's weird because I kind of figured this was coming at, you know, it was about the midpoint of the season. I was like, yeah, I think Jaheim Bell's probably out of here just based on how the season was going for him, being underutilized and things like that. But I had held out some hope that with the last 2 weeks of the year and a new offensive coordinator coming in, that maybe that would have been enough to keep him at South Carolina. Evidently not. And then at the very end of the week, you have Trevion Kenyon stepping away from football. So really, when it rains, it pours, especially in the tight end room at University of South Carolina. So obviously, it goes without saying, I wish these guys nothing but the best. I hope they find a place that suits them. I'm all about trying to better yourself and your situation, but damn, losing these guys sucks, especially Jaheim Bell, Stogner, and Kenyon. Just right before the bowl game, this stinks. Who the hell is going to play tight end? I mean, really? I mean, it leaves you wondering, where is that room going to be next year? Already thinking that far ahead, but I mean, for the bowl game, in all seriousness, I do feel confident in Nate Adkins, right? But outside of him, who is there? I mean, genuinely, who is there? He's going to be playing a lot, I can tell you right now. But it also feels like this bowl game might be shaping up to be another one where the staff has to get creative. Maybe it's another healthy dose of Dak Joyner for the bowl game. Who knows? But as far as next year is concerned for the tight ends, I don't know if there's a way to keep Nate Adkins, maybe a grad year. I think maybe he still has the 2020 special exemption. I don't know, because he has the talent. He grew into the role incredibly well, but outside of him, Shane Beamer and company, they are going to need to, one, recruit the hell out of that position, and two, work the portal themselves. Portal taketh, portal giveth. You got to go find a tight end who can bring some experience. And now you might need to get a couple of tight ends. So it's really interesting to see. But it just speaks to overall in college sports and college football specifically here. It's just portal madness. It has been absolute portal madness. I saw someone posted, it's like a Thanos snap, just taking teams out. Just the portal is crazy. And it's just the new normal, right? And like I said, on one hand, I totally understand an athlete trying to better their situation. But at the same time, I do see it as a big gamble. And then as a fan, you know, you really grow to like some of these athletes a lot. And you certainly want them to start and finish their college career with your school. I mean, case in point, Jaheim Bell. But I don't know. I mean, all you can do is work the system, and let's at least be grateful that we have a coach that understands the value of the portal and knows how to leverage it and has made this school a destination for guys in the portal. But with the news and notes aside, that does bring me to the football season retrospective, as I alluded to. And when I think of a roller coaster of emotions, I think of the 2022 Gamecocks football season. I mean, obviously the Gamecocks ended the season at 8-4, third in the SEC East, which I think exceeded most people's expectations, right? I think you had the most optimistic of fans thinking 8-4. Most reasonable people were probably thinking 7-5, 8-4 maybe a stretch. But how we got there was anything but conventional. So some high-level stats for you here. Carolina finished 8th in the SEC with 31.7 points per game. Now, I'm almost positive that includes everything. So the scores from blocked punts, things like that, even though that late end push probably balances out. And that side of the ball was really the story of the season. Spencer Rattler comes in and brought a lot of excitement with him, brought in some raised expectations, but for the vast majority of the season, things were just not clicking. And the whole offense was just clunky, slow, and was just not doing what many of us expected. And now, because of that, the program is in the midst of an offensive coordinator search, and a lot of us fans are thinking, like, what if, right? What if the offense had been simplified and sped up earlier in the season like it was in the last 2 weeks? Who knows what the possibilities would have been? And don't even get me started on the offensive coordinator search. Ugh, what an exhausting, like, 48 hours if you are deep in Gamecock Twitter like I am. I mean, whew. Don't ask me about it because it's stressful. And I don't want to talk about it because it's stressful. So that's where I'm going to leave it. Once we have an official word, I, of course, will give my thoughts on the search and the guy we hire. But man, it's been an up and down day. Day and a half, my goodness. Back on track here. So on the defensive side of the ball, South Carolina finished 10th in the SEC with 27.5 points allowed per game. But I feel like just like the team as a whole, that side of the ball had some real highs and lows as well. And as critical as we were of the offense all season, there were times where that group earned some criticism as well. Well-earned criticism, especially my thing was allowing teams to jump out to quick leads, which ended up having the team playing from behind early multiple times, right? Florida, Arkansas, Georgia, they really stand out with Florida and Arkansas especially. But I will say that in the big moments, this unit stepped up. Clemson in the second half, A&M late in the game, Kentucky as well, really, from the whole game. So while there were some bad showings and things certainly need to be improved going into next year on a few fronts, overall, this side of the ball held up very well, all things considered, and especially dealing with some of the injuries that this side of the ball did. But throughout the season, you know, there were some incredible moments and certainly some players stood out in my mind. So wanted to give a shout out to these guys. And as I was jotting this down, it just kept more guys, this guy, that guy. It was a great team effort this year. But I got to give a couple of shout outs here. Nick Amanwori, my goodness. And you know what? With him, DQ Smith. I mean, Nick, though, I think he led the SEC in tackles or was towards the top, definitely freshman. But two true freshmen coming in at a position of need in the defensive backfield and played incredibly well. Very few freshman moments. It's bonkers. And hats off to the guys that recruited them and hats off to them. I'm very excited to see them in the Garnet and Black for a couple more years here. Juice Wells, what an awesome development. Coming out of JMU, we knew he had the upside, and boy, did he live up to it. Marshawn Lloyd, really coming of age, growing into his own, really hoping to see him back next year, fingers crossed. Want to give a shout-out to Sherrod Green, finishing his career healthy with some big-time plays and big-time moments. It was so great to see that for him. Zach Sack Pickens, constant disruptor, took that next step that we were hoping to. And in that same line, Jordan Birch, he showed great signs of improvement. His ceiling is still sky high. Darius Rush, I mean, I gave Cam Smith his flowers the other episode, so Darius Rush. Kai Kroger, very huge impact player for this year, Clemson game and beyond. And then ending things off on this list with Spencer Rattler. I mean, geez, I mean, it wasn't always that incredible dynamo quarterback. There were some growing pains, but when he was on, like, beautiful. And those last two games, he was masterful. And we won those games in large part because of his quarterback play, and he was a big reason why there was a lot of momentum going into the year, and his potential of staying will carry that momentum into next year. So let's all do a little prayer circle and hope that he stays along with just about everyone I listed who's eligible to return. But with those accolades out of the way and the stats out of the way here, we will take a trip down memory lane and reminisce on how the season went here. So week one, you know, things got kicked off against Georgia State after all that offseason hype, right? The ESPN show. Remember that? Remember how fun that was? They had the new lights installed. We were excited to see some lights. And it was just one of the biggest lead-ups to an opening night that we have had in Columbia in quite some time. Story of that game was, you know, the two blocked punts for touchdowns. The offense was kind of hit or miss. You saw moments, but we knew that coming into this season, that Beamer ball was in full effect. Special teams was a priority, but little did we know that this game was a precursor to some amazing special teams moments. And so you started the season with a W at home, maybe not as pretty as you thought it was going to be, but you ended up with a nice, comfortable win, 35-14. And then boom, you start SEC play right on the road against Arkansas. That game didn't quite go as well as we wanted to, and I was looking at that as an opportunity to maybe kick the door in a little bit in the SEC. I was looking at this game as an early measuring stick. I knew Arkansas was good, but was hoping for some early season magic. Remember, that was a noon game. The team played well. The offense played well, put up 30 points. Remember, they were really chucking it everywhere. Defense gave up 44, could not stop the run to save our lives, gave up some big-time third downs. That was also when Jordan and Mo both went down. So that was a tough game, and then you turn right around and the Georgia game happened. So real quick, you're 1-2. And you remember what the vibes were like at that point? I mean, it felt like the sky was falling a little bit. I mean, we all knew it was only after week three, and Georgia was, I think they might have been number two at the time, but really the best team in the country. Shane Beamer was asked if there was any quit in the locker room. The vibes were off, but you knew that you had so much season left in front of you that you couldn't get too discouraged, but it was just such a bad showing against Georgia that you weren't sure. But then came Charlotte, which was the get-right game just at the perfect time, which really sprung this team into really just that correct zone that you needed. You beat Charlotte 56-20, and then the Thursday night game, remember that, got moved because of the hurricane against SC State. You win 50-10. So all of a sudden, you're 3-2. You're feeling good, but yes, you're like, but those were the cupcakes. So you did what you're supposed to do, which is what good teams do. The offense was looking great. The defense started to click in those couple of games. We got the first turnover of the year. You saw us getting some more pressure. Things just started to feel like they were turning. And because of that Thursday game, you got a little bit of extra room going to Kentucky. They were ranked 13th at the time. You go up to Lexington at night with a feeling that maybe we could do this. Levis was out. Kentucky had just lost to Ole Miss, I think, the week or two prior, looked vulnerable. You end up going up there, getting that monkey off your back in a huge, massive win, 24-14. And that was the moment where you said, okay, we might have something here where we have our special teams. They made a big play. The defensive line and pass rush was as best as it had been all year. And that's when you started to feel maybe we have something, and you're on a three-game heater. And then you come home to Texas A&M, who was reeling at this point in the season. Heartbreaking loss after heartbreaking loss at home, sellout. Your boy was in the building. And you end up returning the opening kickoff for a touchdown. Had a couple other huge plays. Marshawn Lloyd, just a fantastic showing. And yeah, it was a struggle at times. A&M tried to claw their way back into it. But again, the defense showed up when it mattered. And the offense did just enough to complement Xavier Leggett in that opening kickoff. You win 30-24. You beat Texas A&M for the first time in school history. And you end up on a four-game win streak, which brings us to the Missouri game. Ugh. I know. And it's funny because in the same vein as Kentucky, this Missouri game was almost the opposite of that, where you're like, well, maybe we don't have something here. You had an opportunity to become bowl eligible as early as you had been in like a decade, something like that. Missouri was not that good, but they had been scrappy. And the offense laid an egg. Just simply laid an egg. The opportunities were there time and again. You lose 23-10 at home. And then you were looking at only one home game the rest of the year. And at this point, I was thinking, all right, just get to 6 and try to figure out the rest afterwards, right? You go on the road to Vanderbilt, and Vanderbilt does Vanderbilt things. We come in looking sharper, a little bit more creative, played with a little bit more pace. And despite the quarterback change that gave us a little bit of scare, we ended up winning 38-27, becoming bowl eligible much earlier than we had the year before. And things were pretty good, but again, you're staring at these three-game stretch of Florida, Tennessee, and Clemson, thinking, my gosh, are we going to end up 6-6? I mean, maybe we go to Florida and get the upset there. That's how we get 7 wins. And it was just this weird, like, we have a pretty good team, but I don't know yet. Question marks throughout. And then you go to Florida, and the Florida game happened, where you did not score a single offensive point. It came on special teams. You lose 38-6. Defense could not stop a nosebleed in the first half. And then you're thinking, well, obviously we need massive changes on the offensive side of the ball. Does the defensive side of the ball need help? And you're looking at Tennessee, who was number 5, and the upstate team, who was number 8. And you're like, man, like, geez, what a cruddy way to end the season, right? You had swept, was it sweeping October? I think that might have been right. And then you're looking at a possibly November where you got 1 win or no wins. I forget exactly how the dates came out, but the night is darkest before the dawn. Something like that. Because Tennessee comes into town, and honestly, I, like many of y'all, thought this was not going to go well. Some of y'all had some hope, and that's incredible. Tennessee was one of the hottest teams in the country at the time, trying to get back into the college football playoff with a high-flying, fast-scoring offense. And what did South Carolina do? After not scoring a single offensive point the week before, they put up 63 points. Put up 63 points. What, did we punt once? Like, it was a unreal display of a relentless play calling on the offensive staff. Spencer Rattler was as locked in as I've ever seen a quarterback be at any level. The receivers and him were on the same page 100% of the time. He was perfect. And mind you, this was without Marshawn Lloyd. They put up 63 points, stormed the field, and all of a sudden, South Carolina is on the national stage for what they just did. And you got 7 wins. So in one fell swoop, you improved your season win total year over year in the regular season. You knock off a top 5 team at home. You avenge some demons from the year before against Tennessee, and even the year before that, whatever. And all of a sudden, you're like, what the hell was that? Where was this team all along? We can do something here. We might have something here. You end the season with your annual rivalry game away at noon. The Tigers themselves were thinking maybe there's a chance for playoff hopes. Strong defensive line. What does this team do? They go in there and they stare adversity in the face and they win. Despite a pick six, and a back-breaking turnover in the red zone, in the end zone. You overcome that with fantastic special teams play, creating turnovers. Ballsy play calling, going for it on fourth down a couple of times in high-leverage situations. Spencer Rattler's ability to bounce back from those early game mistakes. And a defense that absolutely clamped in the third and fourth quarter. And a punter who pinned them deep time and time again. And a kicker who gets you the go-ahead points late in the game. You win the game by 1 point, 31-30. What I described was the ultimate team effort. It was a team effort with championship effort, and that's what it took. And yet again, the Gamecocks knock off a top team in the country, avenge a lot of demons, end the losing streak against that freaking upstate team. And because they allow fans to storm the field after every freaking game, we got back-to-back fields stormed. And it was just the most amazing way to end a year. So let's look at some accomplishments that this team did this year. First win at Kentucky since 2013. First four-game win streak since 2013. First ever win over A&M. First AP poll ranking since 2018. The most points scored by an unranked team against an AP top five team ever. That was in the Tennessee game. First AP top five win since 2012. First season with three or more AP top five wins. First season with back-to-back top 10 wins. First win over Clemson since 2013. And the first ranking in the college football playoff rankings. Whew. My God. It's just so cool to sit back now and see how much this team accomplished when it was really all said and done. It certainly was not pretty most of the time. But this team consistently showed fight and played with heart and effort. And just those characteristics alone got them to the 6-win mark. But then when everything came together and the game plan was right and this group was clicking and the talent aligned, they ended the season on the highest of highs, and it was just simply beautiful to watch. What's even more exciting is we get to do it again. We get one more time to try go out there and get our 9th win. But I honestly do think that regardless of outcome, this 2022 team will be looked back on very fondly in Gamecock history. And hopefully, you know, hopefully this season really is that launching pad for this program to become consistently good at a high level. And I think this is what we're talking about here. You know, I've talked a lot about floors, and the floor being absolute bare minimum, get 6, get to a bowl game. We might be done talking about floors. You know, we have the resources and everything for the sky is the limit, but this type of season, right? 8 wins, competitive against the top teams, knocking off a top team here and there. This is what we're talking about here. Now, we got to tighten the thing, you know, tighten the screws up a little bit, right? Missouri game can't happen again. What happened at Florida? That can't happen again. And if you tighten that up, who knows what can happen? But consistently competitive at a high level is the goal. And hopefully this season really is that launching pad for it. It was a really, really fun season. And just like every year, I made some great memories with even better people. And with that, y'all, that wraps up this episode. Please follow me on social media. Twitter is Cox Gamecocks. Instagram is just the name of the show, Cox Talking Gamecocks. I appreciate all y'all. Go Cox.